Thank you to Red Eye, the Photography Network, for partnering with us to produce Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. Red Eye is a not-for-profit organization with a strong ethical focus, offering support and opportunities to help you advance your photography and your career. Find out more at redeye.org.uk. Welcome to Season 3 of the Photo Ethics Podcast. I'm your host, Savannah Dodd, and I'm the founder of the Photography Ethics Center. Each week, I'll be talking with an accomplished photographer about the ethics of their practice. Today, in episode number 10, we'll be talking with Arpita Shah about representing identity. Arpita Shah is a photographic artist based in Eastbourne, UK. She works between photography and film, exploring the fields where culture and identity meet. As an India-born artist, Arpita spent an early part of her life living between India, Ireland, and the Middle East before settling in the UK. This migratory experience is reflected in her practice, which often focuses on the notion of home, belonging, and shifting cultural identities. She is the recipient of the 2019 Lightwork and Autograph ABP Artist in Residence Program in Syracuse, New York, and her work is held at the National Galleries of Scotland. Arpita is a co-founder of Focus Scotland and a member of the Board of Trustees for Street Level Photoworks in Glasgow. Could we start with you just telling us a little bit about the kind of work that you do?
Yeah, sure. So I work with photography and film, and a lot of my work explores intersections of culture, heritage, and identity. This interest stems from my own cultural background of growing up across India, Ireland, Saudi Arabia, Scotland, and UK. I'm really interested in making work that explores the experiences of, you know, the meaning of home, shifting cultural identities, and just, yeah, whether it's photographing my own family members or other families, or particularly South Asian women, my work's about how people navigate across different cultures.
I think working with family and working so close to home can come with its own set of ethical challenges. Have you found that at all in your work when you are working with maybe your own family members?
Yes. I think a lot of the time, you would think it might be a bit easier working with family members, but actually the lines are so blurred with the role you play as a photographer and then the role you play as a family member. So it can be really complex. And I think one of my largest bodies of work is a project called Nalini that I started back in 2015. And Nalini is my grandmother's name, and the project sort of centers around her and unfolds and is about my mother and myself. But when I started the project, it was actually because my grandmother, Nalini, was in a coma and she was really unwell, and we thought we were going to lose her. And I don't see her that often because she lives in India. Since leaving when I was three, we've only seen each other every couple of years. And I always had this sort of guilt that I never really got to know her. And when something like this happens, I think we all have this really deep regret and longing, and just like we need to just sit down and listen to their stories and find out what their life was like before they were our grandparents. And so when she was really unwell, in a way, my mum and aunt and family members were grieving. And, you know, I was also feeling that way, but the photographer in me had this sort of urgency to make work. And so it was really complex when I, you know, decided to start photographing her when she was unwell. My grandmother is a little better now. She's been up and down, but she is a lot better. But during the project, yeah, there were times we thought we were going to lose her. And I just have to speak to family members and tell them, you know, about what I wanted to do. And I think because my mum and my aunt and family members had seen the sort of work I'd made before, they could kind of get an idea of what kind of images I was going to make. And during the process, I also showed them images as I was making them. But it is, yeah, like I think it's something I'm learning from every time, and it changes. I think sometimes when you look back at work, there's certain images of my grandmother that I really love as an artist, and I know curators really like the image. But as an elderly South Asian woman, I know she might not be comfortable with that image maybe being shown. And so, yeah, just trying to like balance and navigate around that, which I'm still learning, but just always having these conversations with her and family members about the work.
Absolutely. And I think you described how like her being unwell was sort of part of the impetus for starting the project. And I had that for myself with my grandfather when his dementia was progressing. It made me want to start a project to sort of unpack our family relationships and his role in the family. But it's also quite complicated, isn't it? When the reason why you're starting it is because of an illness or because of somebody's unwell. And so I think it can be quite hard to tell a story about family members with dignity when the reason why you're doing it is because they're not doing terribly well. Does that make sense? Or did you feel that at all?
That's such a good point you said. Absolutely. It was balancing. I think at times when my gran, she didn't want to be photographed, she wasn't feeling 100% and just told me, you know, not today. And I found other ways to make portraits of her. I don't know if you know photographer Colin Gray, but he's a great photographer based in Glasgow who'd been documenting his family for years and did a great project in sickness and in health. And Colin's a good friend of mine. And I remember emailing him just saying that, you know, my gran's really unwell. She's in and out of hospital. Right now, she doesn't feel up for being photographed. And he was just like, make portraits of her in her room. You know, think of objects maybe that remind you of her. And that's kind of what I did. And so this project was the first time I actually, a lot of my previous works, quite traditional portraiture, but with Nalini, I started making more abstract images, which were actually a lot more layered and poetic than maybe, you know, in telling her narrative and stories about my family, sort of photographing passports or significant places and objects. And so it was combined with portraits of her. There's a lot of close-ups of skin and hair. There aren't many photographs you can actually see my grandmother or my mum sometimes. So there's a bit more of this longing and sort of urge to want to turn around, and kind of like how I felt when I was making the work and exploring my family's history. So it was more evocative, I guess, in that sense than being so literal. I was using metaphors of fragile flowers or photographs that were crumbling sort of next to skin that had aged. That's how I worked around it. But I absolutely understand it's difficult to approach it through the lens. And so you have to be a little more creative and have more conversations around it.
I really appreciate what you were describing there, because I think a lot of times people think of protecting somebody's, I don't know, sensibilities or doing work really ethically restricts their creativity. But I think what you were describing there really shows how actually she wasn't comfortable with it that day. So you found other ways, and that those other ways actually were more expressive and said more than maybe images that were very blunt and showed her whole face or her whole body, and that she wasn't feeling comfortable to do that day, you know? And what about when you are working within the community? You do a lot of portraiture, is that right?
I do, yeah. I do a lot of portraiture. So 2 years ago, I moved down to England, but prior to that, I was in Scotland for 18 years. I studied there, and a lot of the work I've done, they've been various projects, and I think it's depending on whether it's a commission or an artist residency or, you know, personal projects. I think the way I've approached things have always been the same, and I've learned from certain projects, but approaches and methodologies have been a bit different. But a lot of my work is working with families, particularly South Asian women, photographing them in the studio or in their home, and making work about the meaning of home, you know, exploring cultural identity. And so in 2014, I did a project. It was the Commonwealth Games that were happening in Glasgow. And as part of that, Creative Scotland, which is sort of like the Arts Council, they commissioned me to make some work exploring Scotland's connection to other Commonwealth countries. And as part of that, I decided to photograph about, I think, 25 families across Scotland that had links to other Commonwealth countries. And I photographed them in their homes, travelled to their houses, and yeah, did sort of quite traditional family portraits. I really love Thomas Struth. That was kind of inspired a bit by him. But family portraits and photographing families is just something I've done from the very beginning. I think when you're making work about home and cultural roots, like for me, the family is core to that. Yeah, so I photographed all these families. And a lot of the time in the shoots, I would initially go to their house if I could beforehand and interview them and, you know, just get to know them. I think if I've got the opportunity, and from most times I do when I'm making work, I've got enough time and it's never really rushed to make the photographs. So I go to their house, record them and family members about their journeys to Scotland, asking them what home means to them, and then tell them about myself. I think I'm very fortunate, but a lot of the time people I work with and photograph, because we're kind of exploring cultural identity and the meaning of home, I can identify a lot with that. So we already have this sort of common ground where we connect in that sense, and they really know what my work's about. So yeah, so for that project, I would then go and photograph the families, and then each family member got a copy of the photograph. I always ensure I get model release forms as well before the shoot. And yeah, that's sort of one of the projects I've done.
I think that that's really interesting, the way that you describe how not only are you interviewing them, but you're also sharing something of yourself. I think that that's like a real reciprocal relationship in that way. It's not just trying to extract somebody else's stories and put them on paper, but it's bringing yourself into the equation. I think there's something really beautiful about that.
Thank you, Savannah. I think, yeah, for me, it's always kind of been like that. Regardless, I think sometimes with artists, when you're working in a commission or a personal project or something that's been funded, it can kind of be different. But I think there's this sort of underlying thread in all my work, which is sort of connected to my own background of my family migrating around. And so that always connects me to the individuals I work with when I'm making images. Sometimes, not always, but yeah, for sort of longer term projects I've made, that's been the case. And I photograph my mother a lot in projects as well. She kind of features in my work as well. So it's personal, collective issues as well, but always kind of connected. Yeah, autobiographical in a sense as well. And a shared experience is what I look at. But I did a project in Stornoway in the Isle of Lewis, which is in the Outer Hebrides, back, gosh, I think it was in 2017, where there's a great organisation called Anlanter, and they do a festival celebrating Scotland's links to India, because there is this big rich history linked to Colin McKenzie, who was from Stornoway, and him travelling to India, I think back in 16th or 17th century. And so this festival celebrates that. And as part of the festival, they'd invited me to make some work in Stornoway, because there was this kind of little pocket of oral histories of mainly Pakistani families that had migrated there from the 30s and 40s onwards. And at one point, I think there were over 100 people in that community. A lot of them were family members. And a lot of their kids have kind of been moving back to the mainland. And all these oral histories are kind of being forgotten because, yeah, they're moving back to Glasgow or Edinburgh. And then there was this kind of really important history. And so as part of that project, I was originally asked to photograph the families. But what I found was, when I was having conversations with them, we were having Indian chai, and it was very much sort of like speaking to my own family members. And the project ended up not being photographs of the families, but it was kind of oral recordings. And we made this chai stall that toured around the island with wireless headphones that were sort of, I'd made a soundscape of exits of interviews, but I'd also asked some of the participants to select songs that they remembered that reminded them of the homeland, and certain sounds that they remembered, and certain sounds in Scotland. So it was this sort of soundscape of them talking about their journey to Scotland, their experiences, and it was fused with music. And yeah, more like environmental sounds of starlings in the Isle of Lewis to street sounds in Calcutta. And it was a really great project to do. And yeah, it kind of, I was really fortunate that I could kind of shift what I'd been asked to do. And they kind of really had, yeah, listened to me. And I think that experience, in a way, being able to hear those sounds and drink tea, all these senses about home and displacement were being sparked up when you were listening. So yeah, the photographs didn't work at that point. So I ended up doing something very different.
How do you make that decision, first of all, about, you know, when photographs work for one of your projects and when they aren't going to work? And also, relatedly, what are the different challenges, or how do you navigate the ethics in different ways when you're working more with sound versus lens-based media?
I think people, from my experience, and I haven't done much stuff with sound, but with sound, I think there's just something more intimate there in a way, but it's also a little less literal in terms of seeing someone's face. So in a way, I think people are more open to being really honest about their experiences and, you know, because in a way they're protected and, you know, in a sense they are. Not that if they've agreed to doing the work, it's not, protection is very important. But I think with photographs, it's something I've always learned from and I'm still learning. What I found is a lot of the time as a photographer, when, you know, I take a photo shoot of somebody, the photograph they're going to pick is always going to be very different to the one I'm going to pick. And that's just something I've learned through photographing my mum and friends and all the photo shoots that I've done, you know, for over 15 years. And it's a really difficult one that I'm still kind of navigating through, because I feel like when I do a photo shoot and before it, I'm very clear that, you know, as my role as a photographer, and when I'm editing images, I'm going to be editing them as a series. You know, obviously, if somebody has said they don't want that image, we'll go through. I've been doing a project recently where, yeah, some of the women I photographed, they've just asked to see some of the other images, and I've shown it to them and I've explained why I picked that particular one, because I've edited it in the context of the whole series, and that's how I'm editing as an artist, you know. And then we've just had that conversation, so I'm definitely a lot more open to these conversations, and I've learned from that. But I think it's just really difficult, because it is very important when you're making work about people, you want them to be comfortable. But sometimes, I don't know, I think it's good to show them like the whole series of work so they can see it in the scale that it's meant to be, in the sort of dialogue. A lot of the time my images, I like them to have certain dialogues. I did a project called Poda, the Sacred Cloth, and in the portraits I made, some of the women are looking at the camera, some are looking to the left and right. And, you know, the work was made site specific in East Pollock Shields in Glasgow back in 2014. And when I started making the work, I very much wanted these women to be like they were having a conversation on the wall and looking at each other. So that's kind of how I visualized it in my head. And so I think through time, I've got a lot better. I think it's very important ethically to be very transparent and clear on your role as a photographer, but also always be open to input and feedback that the person you photographed had. And if your work's about representation, like if somebody feels they are being misrepresented, then that's a conversation you need to have and something they need to be comfortable with. So I think, yeah, it's just something you're learning about. But most of the time, I don't think people sometimes know the way images are used now and distributed. I think until you actually see your image on a wall, like you might agree to something, but you just don't know how they're going to feel about that. And most of the time it's fine. But, you know, there are times when for me it hasn't been. And it's just kind of, yeah, learning how to work through that and how you can be better, more clear, but also how you can be more flexible as well if that is an issue. Like, how do you, you know, work around that and make sure everyone feels protected and respected?
When I first got to Northern Ireland, I was working on a project photographing Irish League football supporters. And I still have some of those photographs, you know, on my computer. And every once in a while, I'll come across them again. And it's funny because I have these photographs of people and it's so fresh in my mind, the photographs. And if I see one of the people, because I'm friends with some of the people that I photographed, it's just so funny because I think that they don't really maybe remember or have the same relationship to the photograph yeah. that I have, or I feel like I have a closer relationship yeah. to them because I have this photograph that I see somewhat regularly. So it is quite funny how maybe my memory of that might be quite different from theirs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And I think maybe in the case of that incident I told you about, the Sitterite photographed, clearly, yeah, there wasn't enough transparency. Or I think one of the things was because so much time had passed, she maybe, you know, felt like she couldn't get in touch with me, or I don't know. I really wish she had got in touch with me, and it's made me a lot more conscious of making sure I'm in touch with people I photograph. You know, it's not always possible to do that, but it's sort of making sure you give them the sort of details and resources to kind of always access your website or your social media to see what you're up to, you know, have a newsletter sometimes. Yeah, I'll send, if I have particular exhibitions on where it's of people I photographed and I've got their email addresses, I'll invite them to the opening. And so, yeah, I think in our heads, it's very fresh and we know them because we look at these images every other day. But actually for them, you're right. They might not really remember the conversation and that moment, and actually 6-7 years later have no clear recollection of it happening or what was agreed. So yeah, I think it just really shows you that power you have, but also that responsibility you have if your work's about representation. Like, how can you be more ethical around that? How can you have that dialogue and keep that dialogue open than you just going in photographing and then, you know, doing what you want with that image? But I think it's always these conversations you have, and there's always different dilemmas that might come up. So it's just kind of learning, but always being really transparent, I think. I think that's one of the things that are really important, is just being really transparent about your role, what the work's about. If you're not sure how it's going to turn out, then, you know, just be really honest with that. And yeah, just keeping that dialogue going with them and obviously getting consent.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really about relationship building, isn't it? And I guess I was wondering, with your experience of having lived across so many different countries, and from such young age, do you think that that has influenced the way that you approach people when you're photographing them?
I think so. That's a really good question. I don't think I've been asked that before. I think it does in a way, because we have moved around. I am quite good at, you know, finding like a common ground and just being quite friendly and connecting with people. But yeah, I think it's just, I've never been a sort of, I'm not a street photographer. I sort of usually have to really think about my images. I draw a lot from paintings. So, you know, the conversations around the shoot and the work happens before. And I think that can form more of a relationship with who you're photographing through that way, instead of sort of going straight in with the camera. But sometimes, you know, photographers that do go in straight with the camera also make really powerful work and then have a conversation later. So that's depending on what dynamic works for you. But yeah, I think definitely with the themes I explore in my work, there's this sort of shared experience and this kind of understanding that really helps me and the people I photograph connect in a way. And yeah, it's kind of like an icebreaker, I guess, but a bit more intimate because we kind of get each other.
You said earlier that things like model release forms and stuff like that wasn't really very well addressed when you were studying. And I guess I'd like to know, maybe for those who are studying now, what recommendations would you give them, or what resources would you point them toward?
That's a very good question, Savannah. Yeah, I think when I was studying, it was a different generation of photographers that were teaching me. And I think, yeah, the way they made images, they all sort of had more documentary reportage backgrounds. And it was just a very different process for them as men, I think, and yeah, going in and making documentary work. So we really weren't taught about, you know, that responsibility and power you have. Like, thank God there's, you know, Photo Ethics Center and Photography is Social Practice. And there's all these resources now, which really, yeah, give you a lot more resources. There's more discourse around it. So I'd recommend both of those. And in terms of model release forms, AOP's model release form's really good. And RPS, I'd recommend. But most of the time I will combine and, you know, draw from other templates and then also add other sections that connect more with my own sort of ethics of what, you know, information I think is important to tell the people I photograph. And yeah, I'll tweak it a little bit. But I think, yeah, from my experience, just being really honest about the duration as well. And also, Savannah, I think it's really hard because, you know, I've made work in the past that I really thought was a small project. And, you know, it can end up 15 years later, you know, on a billboard somewhere. And you don't know these things. And so you just have to think about protection all the time, you know, protecting yourself as well, protecting the people you photograph and being really transparent. And, you know, in the past, I've been quite nervous of, I've always had model release forms signed, but just asking someone to sign something for, you know, forever, that's quite overwhelming. And I think that can, you know, sometimes maybe put photographers off a little bit, like it shouldn't, because, you know, you just have to think, if you take your practice seriously and your work seriously, like you have to think about getting an agreement with the people you photograph, being really fair, thinking about how do you protect them, how you protect yourself. So, you know, these things are really crucial when you photograph people and your intention is to publish it or exhibit it somewhere.
So one thing I like to ask everybody is, what does photography ethics mean to you?
You know, to be an ethical photographer is to accept your learning from experiences, like that you're learning, and there isn't like a straight guide to how to be ethical. It's based so much on what kind of genre you work in, what kind of photography you are, what your own methodologies are, you know, as a practitioner. But crucially, it's about being aware of the power you have as a photographer, being responsible and accountable for that trust that people are giving you when, you know, they allow you to photograph them, respecting that agreement, respecting them. I think always reflecting on your position, your intention. But, you know, as I said earlier on, I think the importance and to be an ethical photographer is just being honest and transparent with the people you photograph and work with in what you're saying, you know, what your role is, yeah, what the work's about. And one of the things I think that I learned a bit later on in my career was that good intentions are not good ethics. And I think in a way, like, that was quite blurred in my head and it was very naive. But actually, you know, having good ethics is, you know, protecting people, protecting yourself, protecting the people you photograph, making sure you have consent. And, you know, consent, I think a lot of people think it's just getting permission to take a photograph. But actually, you know, as I've got older and, you know, studied more and looked at more resources, consent's actually also about making them aware of where the photographs are going to be shown, how they're going to be shown. Yeah, I think unless you're aware or familiar with like arts or, you know, whatever photography industry you work in, if you're not in that, you don't realize that, you know, this image could be on a big billboard, it could be published in the front of a paper, it could be shown as public art on walls in public spaces. And it's just, yeah, letting people know, maybe showing examples. I think what I do now and what I will be doing is just showing people like examples of previous shows I've had, the different kind of ways work's been shown, when it's been shown on billboards outside or when it's been shown in a gallery, and just showing them a whole spectrum of not just getting consent for that photograph to be taken, but actually how it's going to be shown and how long it can be shown for. A lot of the time, yeah, like, work doesn't get shown for 15, 20 years sometimes. And it's just discussing that is like another conversation, I think, because, you know, how can you always keep in touch with people you photographed 20 years ago? Like, that's a lot more complex, but it's just letting people know that this is, you know, when they're agreeing to being photographed, this is giving them the information of this is the different types of formats, this is the duration, and then, you know, making sure they're aware of and comfortable with all that.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Photo Ethics Podcast. The aim of this podcast is to share new insights about photography ethics with others. So if you heard something you liked, please share this podcast with someone who would appreciate it. The links to all things mentioned in this episode are available in the show notes at www.photoethics.org. Join me next week when we hear from Fati Aboubakar on changing the narrative. In each episode of the podcast, we ask our guests, what does photography ethics mean to you? This is a question that everyone in the photography industry should be able to answer. That's why the Photography Ethics Center is asking you, our listeners, to commit to writing and publishing your own statement of ethics. Visit www.photoethics.org/ethics to learn more and to make the pledge committing to ethical transparency, accountability, and awareness. That's www.photoethics.org/ethics. This podcast was edited and digitally produced by Ellie Gascoigne.